Beyond Pistons, your daily Detroit Pistons podcast. Part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
What is happening and welcome to the Locked On Pistons podcast, your episode for Tuesday, May 1st, and the goddamn Celtics still looking formidable despite losing their top three or three of their top four players for game one of the Eastern Conference semifinals. This is your boy Matt Shook, host of the Locked On Pistons podcast, an AP writer out in Chicago and a Pistons fan and follower my whole life and a sports newspaper reporter for over a decade as well, which just means I'm old at this point. But we're going to be recapping game one of the Eastern Conference semifinals with the Boston Celtics topping the Philadelphia 76ers. And I'll be asking the question, why can't the Detroit Pistons have a Brad Stevens? That looks like that would be fun, wouldn't it? We're also going to be updating the latest happenings with the Pistons GT team, the NBA 2K League esports team here in Detroit. They're in action today as well. And we got another segment of Pistons playoff playback, our look back. Today we're going to be looking back to the bad boys era, but not great, happy bad boys times. Instead, more the sad end of days for the bad boys there. But the Celtics, as I mentioned, topped the visiting 76ers in Game 1 on Monday night, 117-101. Terry Rozier, I mean, I know he's not a nobody anymore because of what he's doing in these playoffs and what he's done really in his first couple years for the Celtics, but, you know, mid-first round pick out of Louisville, not really a regarded prospect, 29 points, showed up in the Drew Bledsoe New England Patriots uniform to poke fun at that clown, Eric Bledsoe. Rozier added 8 rebounds and 8 assists. Terry freaking Rozier. A good player, but I already kind of feel bad for the team that ends up giving him his first big contract in a couple years. You see, you know, Avery Bradley, does that ring a bell? His old Celtics kind of find a way of ending up on other rosters and being pretty bad players for other teams that put the investment in on those guys. 26 points for Al Horford of Grand Ledge. Jason Tatum, the rookie, third pick of this year's draft, 28 points for the Celtics as well. The Boston defense frustrated Ben Simmons of the 76ers, the rookie, into 7 turnovers. 31 points for Joel Embiid. Jaylen Brown did not play in this game. He's got an injury. So that means the Celtics, like I said, were without 3 of their 4 best players. When you add in Kyrie Irving and Gordon Hayward, both out for the year. Philadelphia ended up 5 of 26 from 3-point line, from 3-point land, 19% from 3. And I don't want to overreact too much to this game. I still believe that the 76ers are going to make some threes and ultimately win this series. But, I mean, it's just frustrating. Goddamn Stevens. And this is basically just me as a Pistons fan being jealous right now. But I couldn't help but notice the contrast while watching the game tonight of what Boston is doing with how little they have right now talent-wise, very little that they have experience-wise, and what is happening right now with the Pistons as we wait word from the Tea Party that Tom Gores and Stan Van Gundy are having. And again, maybe today, May 1st is the day we find out what's going on with the coach here in Detroit. But I know that immediately I'm a little bit hypocritical here, as I have said on this podcast pretty much from the beginning that I think that they should bring back Stan Van Gundy for another year as coach. But a lot of that has to do with my lack of trust that the organization would go out and find that next Brad Stevens gem. There is nothing that Stan Van Gundy can do feasibly over the next calendar year to even approach the levels of Brad Stevens, who, and I don't know if this is his fourth year or what it is for the Celtics, but already has surpassed Van Gundy's career and most other coaches in the league as well, save, you know, your Kerrs and Popoviches and maybe one or two others. But, I mean, I read a piece about 10 days ago from Jackie McCallum on ESPN.com, the great former Boston Globe writer who appears often on ESPN TV as well. Well-written piece. You should check it out. It was about Jaylen Brown and his emergence. Jaylen, in his second year of the league, Cal, guy is 21 years old. Just the advanced details of the defensive rotations that are being schooled into Brown and then being understood by the young player and followed through on the court in, you know, obviously NBA speed by Brown, who's 21 years old, to turn him into an elite defender in year two, all the while he's still finding a way to develop into the team's main scorer at times this offseason. Second year in the league, 21 years old. Where is Stanley Johnson's development on both ends of the court? I know he's made his mark a little bit defensively, especially in year three this year, but Where's the shrewd front office that can stockpile assets like Boston does and then maximize their return? Where's any kind of creativity in team building? Where's a cohesive roster of bad boys, of tough players, of smart players? Because Jaylen Brown is both. And I say all that, and this will sound contradictory, but he's a Boston athlete. So I think in some corners of the internet, he's a little bit overrated just because that's how these things go with Boston athletes, with all the amount of national prestige that a lot of their media members have. But Henry Ellenson, Stanley Johnson, Luke Kennard, a couple of nice, decent players there. Some NBA skills out of two of them, obviously, especially defensively from Stanley Johnson and offensively from Luke Kennard. But and Ellenson, who the hell knows what kind of player he is? You know, we finished year two and we still have no clue. I really would hope that Arne Tellem, maybe he would kind of step up and take control of this organization at some point now that he's got a little bit of the other special projects in some ways out of the way with the practice facility and the move downtown. I just really hope that he's in LA during some of these meetings with Tom Gores and Stan Van Gundy, trying to kind of demand improvements out of this team and out of this organization. Understand the partnership between Tom Gores and Stan Van Gundy. I don't have a lot of confidence that that's going to work with just those two. And I, like I said, if Arne Tellem's got to be the guy to step in and grab the bull by the horns, then he needs to be the one that does it and shakes this organization up somehow. Where's the innovation? Where are the ideas? Where's the creativity? Where's the discipline on defense? The complexities and nuanced defense that it's a step too slow in rotations many times this year. And obviously the biggest problem with the Pistons was the offense this year. They had a nice start to the season, maybe the quarter or first one third of the season with the new wrinkle that they threw in. But after that, they were completely lost, despite the fact that there's some talent offensively right there. You know, other NBA teams aren't going through those stretches of futility offensively. And just there just wasn't enough there for this team. And I'm not going to let the Reggie Jackson injury be the way to blame this whole thing. There were other things to try. You know, Ish Smith starting and playing with the first unit is something that me and many others have been ragging on throughout the second half of the season, and it's something that was never really adjusted, something that was never really tried. Why can't we find some assistant coaches that other teams might want one day? I've talked about that before. Stan Van Gundy does not have any kind of coaching tree out there in the NBA. It's not just the, I don't want a coach brought in here that's just another one of the former jocks that are retreads. I have, and we're on the outside, so it's difficult to pinpoint on individual assistant coaches and say what this guy isn't doing. But I have no evidence that Tim Hardaway or Malik Allen or Rex Walters are doing anything of value for this team. Maybe they are. I'm sure that there is some kind of value being brought by all those guys. But it's one of those things where on the outside, we don't know a lot looking in. We just know that Stan Van Gundy's kind of running the show and that there's not really a lot of strong voices inside that locker room, even including players, by the way. But there's not a lot of, you know, other strong personalities or other strong creative innovators out there that are doing anything for this team right now. But we had Kevin Arnovitz of ESPN.com the other day also did a deep dive into all the NBA head coaching candidates out there. He does this every year. And there are young assistants out there that are innovators, that are coaching under some of the best names out there in the coaching world, but they're not here. They're not coaching under Stan Van Gundy. Organization-wise, where is Pat Garrity, the assistant GM that's supposedly a candidate to run his own team someday? Why isn't he doing things that could push this team into the new century? Why doesn't he figure out that, oh, maybe Donovan Mitchell's the guy we should draft, looking at him as his college tape and the potential and also the need for the Pistons to maybe take a little bit of a swing instead of the bunt single with Luke Kennard. That, again, a nice player, but obviously you'd be silly to say right now that anything other than Donovan Mitchell with that pick would have been the one. Just tired of watching better franchises run circles around these Pistons, and I don't know that Stan Van Gundy is going to be the one that's going to change it. The next coach of the Pistons, whenever that's going to happen, maybe it will happen this offseason. Who knows? We have no freaking idea as Pistons fans right now. It better be someone that we've either never or rarely heard of or maybe haven't even thought of in the context of the next NBA coach. I'd love to have Budenholzer, but he ain't coming here. I don't really want a Fizdale or a Mark Jackson or Frank Vogel, another retread in the coaching community that hasn't worked other places. Bring me the next Brad Stevens. Maybe if it's a little bit of a long shot, a little bit of a home run swing like the Celtics did when they hired the Butler coach. An innovator, a smart guy. Why don't we ever find that guy? Just That's my rant on Brad Stevens and how much he annoys me out of basically pure jealousy with what he's doing with the Celtics again this year, despite having no bullets in the chamber. But those two teams will meet again on Thursday in Boston for game two, and I'll be watching through tears probably as contemplate what's going on with these Detroit Pistons. Also tonight, the Cavs and the Raptors, game one, 8 o'clock. Toronto favored by 6.5. I got some blowback online for yesterday. I had my latest prediction on this series. I said Toronto in 5. We'll see, but it felt like just feels like Toronto is a much better team than Indiana. And even LeBron James, Superman himself, I don't know if he's going to be able to pull his team through against a superior opponent from top to bottom on the roster. Well, not top, I guess. The top of the roster is favored for Cleveland, but everything else is pretty much in Toronto's favor. Also tonight, Pelicans at the Warriors, game 2, 10:30. Golden State will continue to march through those guys as predicted here. 10.5 points is that spread. And that sounds about right. But we're also going to be talking a little bit here about the latest on what's up with the Pistons GT, the esports team. And if your company wants to reach men between the ages of 18 and 44, then you should be sponsoring this podcast. Locked On Pistons is listened to by 98% men and 80% between the ages of 18 to 44. So if that demo sounds good to you, this is your spot. Plus, we got reasonable rates. So email me at Matt_Shook, S-C-H-O-C-H, at yahoo.com to find out more.
Yes!
Later on, we're going to be doing the Pistons playoff playback segment, because since we can't live in the present with Pistons playoffs, we'll be living in the past a little bit. And it's been a while since we talked about the Pistons GT team, the esports group in the new NBA 2K League. They did their draft last month and got 6 dudes from around the country. And hopefully we're going to be meeting with some of those guys and having them on the podcast sometime soon as well. But guess what? They're going to be playing today. The tip-off tournament begins today in New York City. The start of a 15-week regular season, and today is the start of the first of 3 tournaments that will be contested throughout the year. $100,000 in cash will be awarded total to the final 4 teams, so they're going to be divvying that up based on finishing. Obviously, the Pistons GT team will be playing today in Group A, along with Bucks Gaming, Cavs Legion GC, so the Cavaliers aren't the only Cleveland professional team in action today, and also the Kings Guard Gaming Group, which is the team that Shaq helped draft for the Sacramento franchise as well. So the Pistons GT team will be playing today from 5 p.m. to 11 p.m. Eastern, and you can watch the guys go at it on the NBA Twitch channel, where they will be streaming the games there. So they're going to divide up. They got Group B going on Wednesday and continuing through Friday with the 4 groups. And then to qualify for Saturday's playoff rounds, the Pistons GT, who are only playing in pool play action today on Tuesday, and have to finish in the top 2 of their pool. So they'll be playing 3 games back-to-back, and obviously you would think a 2-1 finish will get you in, and 1-2 probably won't, unless there's some anomalies as far as the finishing. You know how the pool play works and all that. So if you're watching today on the Twitch channel, send along your thoughts to me on social media. Let me know what you think, if you're a gamer, or especially if you're not a gamer, actually, and just let me kind of know what you think about the proceedings. This is obviously a new thing, the NBA 2K League that Adam Silver has got going here, so we'll see how successful it is and how much it catches on with the casual fan, in addition to the gaming world out there as well. It's out there, obviously. I saw that there was some Madden esports on TV after the draft, on the NFL draft on Saturday afternoon, so this thing is happening. It's on, and I'm interested to see how it goes for the NBA esports 2K League. Also on Monday, and this is kind of speaks to the co-branding, and I'm sure that Zach Lowe of ESPN.com maybe got an advanced look at some of these things so he could put together, this article that he put out on Monday morning. And you can see where maybe Adam Silver and some of the NBA communications people maybe reach out to some of those big-name writers like Zach Lowe, who are well-read in the basketball community. Anyway, Zach Lowe, who's the resident cool guy, ESPN NBA writer, and I say that kind of in jest. I really like Zach Lowe. He does a great job with his coverage and the podcast as well. The 17 esports franchises, including the Pistons GT, unveiled digital renderings of their home courts for the teams that they'll be playing on as they play NBA 2K, a video game, on those courts. I retweeted the article on Monday that Zach Lowe did on the court design. Zach has a little bit of a fetish about court designs and mascots and other off-court league oddities, I guess on-court for the court, because you can't get any more on-court than the court. But here's what he said about the Pistons logo. He loves it, the Pistons court and all that. It's the logo, by the way, is a blue skull with Pistons, engine Pistons, coming out of each side of the skull face with the same colors as the Pistons franchise as well. Here's what Zach said. Zach says this: "My God, that logo is badass. Way better than the real Pistons generic, quote, name over ball, unquote, logo. It is similar to an alternative logo the Pistons commissioned from Mark Fox, a Bay Area designer, in the 1990s before they chose a flaming horse head instead." And now inside the article, they have a picture of the, apparently this was the logo that Mark Fox dreamed up when the Pistons were looking for a little change of branding in the 90s and went with the teal uniforms instead. And they show it. It's a nut, like a, as in nuts and bolts, with crisscrossing wrenches below it, with kind of a jazzed up font of the Pistons underneath, kind of a harder edge logo, obviously, than anything the Pistons have ever had. So back to what Zach Lowe said. "Back then, Fox used car parts to nod at the Pistons' nickname and mimic skull and crossbones imagery. Pistons GT has dropped the pretense and incorporated a straight-up skull crisscrossed with churning Pistons. Hell yes. The red-on-blue contrast is a little harsh, but this would work as a real court. The red GT, quote, along each baseline also provides some symmetry. Using smaller Pistons as the IS in Pistons along the baseline is neat." So obviously you can check out the court design in Zach's article, and I'll tweet that out as well, as the Pistons professional basketball team released that court image, as they have been releasing, you know, information from Kevin Griggs' communication office about what's going on with the esports team. So obviously, you know, it's symmetry. They're intertwined with the Pistons real club, and maybe even more so in the future as the Players Union and the esports league kind of sort out what this relationship will be like in the future. But again, with a podcast daily talking about Pistons basketball and not all that much to talk about with some ways in the playoffs and the draft and the free agency, we're going to be talking a little bit about this esports team. So let me know what you think, or if it's boring you to tears, that is fine too. But we'll get back to basketball here in a sec. Today in Pistons playoff playback, since we can't live in the present, we'll relive the past a little bit. And the team that does not want to relive the past in any way, shape, or form, the Detroit Lions. I was listening today to Matt Derry of Detroit Radio on Locked On Lions. He had Mike O'Hara of Lions.com on. We'll try to have his counterpart, Keith Langlois of Pistons.com, on soon. We've been trying to nail a time down with Keith, who's a good guy, and it will come soon. So stay tuned for Keith Langlois coming up soon here on these airwaves. But check out Matt Derry on Locked On Lions every day as well, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, NBA podcast for every team, every NFL team as well, and reaching out to some MLB teams. Those are going strong too. So, and also check out the landing page, LockedOnSports.com. But Locked On Network, your team every day. Time for Pistons playoff playback. We all remember the championship in 1989 sweeping the Lakers. Actually, I barely remember that one, to be honest. I was young, obviously. I remember the Joe Dumars block of David Rivers and that save that sort of sealed the win in the fourth quarter. We taped it on VHS, and I watched that game many times on sick days and over the years since then, Kareem's last game as a NBA superstar. Then we all remember the 007 Vinnie Johnson shot clinching Game 5 in the title against Portland as the Bad Boys went back-to-back that next season. And unfortunately, we also remember the following year when the Pistons were swept out of the Eastern Conference Finals by Michael Jordan with Isaiah, Bill Laimbeer, and the guys walking off the court before it ended on Memorial Day, by the way. I remember listening to that game on the radio heading back from up north. That was in 1991. Now, one that I don't remember was the following year, the final stand of the Bad Boys, and it was not a good one. 1992, Chuck Daly's final season as coach of the Detroit Pistons. Detroit won 48 games that year, 14 above 500 in the regular season, and finished in fifth place, the fifth seed in the Eastern Conference, taking on fourth-seeded New York Knicks in the first round at best-of-five game series. Back then, Pistons got routed in Game 1 in Madison Square Garden and won a close one in Game 2. The Knicks then won a close one in the Palace in Game 3 to take a 2-1 lead. But then, today's Pistons playoff playback, May 1st, 1992, the final playoff win of the Bad Boys era. The Big O, Orlando Woolridge, was a starter for that Pistons team. And again, I must have blacked this whole thing out. You know, as a young person, when I was, you know, 6 and 7 years old, when they won the first couple titles, you remember those great championship wins. But sometimes when you're 8 or 9 or whatever I was when 1992, you kind of block out the disappointments. They probably ended in tears for young Matt Shook, if I'm not, if I could be so honest to admit that I used to cry when the Pistons lose big playoff games. But the Pistons got the 86-82 victory behind 23 points from Joe Dumars, 15 from Isaiah Thomas. The Big O, Orlando Woolridge, had 13. Dennis Rodman had 12 points and 17 rebounds. This was the Knicks, obviously, with Patrick Ewing and Charles Oakley, Mark Jackson, Gerald Wilkins, the X-Man, Xavier McDaniel. Off the bench, they had John Starks, Greg Anthony, and the late Anthony Mason as well. Pistons went up 10 at the half and held on in this one, and it was all leading up to two nights later when the Knicks closed out the Pistons in Madison Square Garden, 94-87, behind 31 from Pat Ewing, outdueling Isaiah Thomas's 31. My mom used to call Patrick Ewing the Band-Aid Man because he wore all the knee pads, and she just thought that was the funniest thing ever, calling Patrick Ewing the Band-Aid Man. But anyway, things had obviously changed for the Pistons over the couple of years since the last title. I wonder how much the wear and tear that Isaiah endured during the championship runs really slowed his game down quickly in the aftermath of those runs. His numbers dropped even in this season, and Joe Dumars kind of took on the best player of the team mantle, or maybe even Dennis Rodman too, as his rebounding numbers were through the roof in the post-championship era. While Isaiah was obviously still the leader of the team and butted heads with Lambeer too, leading up to the famous punch of Lambeer's head at practice. That would come at the very beginning of the 93-94 season, which was 2 years later, which would be Isaiah Thomas's last season. But after this year, Chuck Daly would head to the Orlando Magic, and Ron Rothstein would take over as coach of the Pistons and struggle in his one season. And like I said, when Zeke punched Lambeer, that was under new coach Don Chaney 2 years after this loss to the New York Knicks, and Isaiah's Achilles tendon would snap later that year in the final regular season home game. And then life would pass the bad boys on after that. So I guess a little more of a depressing look in Pistons playoff playback today, but life is hard. It's not always rosy, and I hope you enjoyed this look back anyway. So give us a follow on Twitter at @Matt_Shook, S-C-H-O-C-H, another underscore after that, and also at the Locked On Pistons Twitter account. Also check out the Facebook page, Locked On Pistons-MattShook, and go on iTunes, be nice, and give us a rating and review. That helps out our numbers and helps other fans find the podcast as well. So we'll be looking at some more NBA playoff action, hoping to get in touch with some of the Pistons GT guys this week. Got another special, special guest lined up in case we ever get some Stan Van Gundy news. He told me he'll talk to me after that. And then also, we're still waiting on word for Stan Van Gundy, and maybe that will come today. We will stay tuned on Twitter and see if there's any Woj bombs coming as well today. So thanks for listening, everyone. Enjoy your day. It's finally some nice weather out there, and we'll talk to you all again very soon.